It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here in Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, where I have a very, 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 very special guest that we're doing a bonus show with you today. We're just going to ramble it with Bradley. Now, Bradley is a former officer in New Hampshire. Now, he is a gentleman that has started to come down the freedom path, and how far will he go? Bradley Jardis is well known to a lot of people in a lot of different areas for a lot of different things. And I'll tell you what we're going to be talking about. I met Bradley a couple years ago when I was in Manchester in support of Dr. Paul and his run for the presidency. And a lot of people wanted to make sure that I got to meet Bradley. And I remember it was outside the tavern there. And I don't think he was in uniform at the time, but he was making the argument that he was for freedom. He's like, yeah, no, I understand, man, all this and, you know, our job and what we're doing and what we're called to do and this war on drugs, it's not working and so on. And he joined LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Well, he was a young man. He's probably in his late 20s. And he made the decision that he was going to choose a path of freedom. How far do you go? And how far can you go with a badge? Well, eventually, he made his desires to support a constitutional form of law enforcement known, and he got a lot of pressure. He made note of himself in speaking to people of import. We'll talk about that. And then you had the pressure that came from his fellow officers and his supervisors. Oh, you're not allowed. Well, we'll talk about that. Then we had LEAP. Say, oh, you're too radical. Well, we'll definitely talk about that. There's a path that we all take when we make these decisions. Where does it lead us? How does it start? What kind of person wants to become a law enforcer to begin with and then finds that he's not happy with the laws that he's being told he has to enforce? These are questions that I want to ask and I want answered. And I've got to know Bradley over the time we spent before, and today he went to the Arizona Breakfast Club while he's visiting here in Phoenix, and he spoke to the people there. He had a nice big crowd there today, and they got a good dose of a lot. We talked about Jose Garina, the gentleman, the Marine two-tour Iraq veteran that was gunned down with 61 bullet holes in him down in Tucson. Well, you know, Bradley may have something to say about that. Then we talked about the drug war itself, government, how people fight back, and Bradley fit right in giving his story. I want to welcome Bradley Jardis. Welcome to the show, Bradley. What I'd like you to do is go ahead, let's start off from the beginning, because we can't. I'd like to know where you grew up, and at what time did you decide that you wanted to be an officer, and why?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to do an interview with you. My path into the law enforcement world began when I was 15. I grew up in Southampton, New Hampshire. I like to call myself a born and raised free stater. And I was born in Exeter, New Hampshire on October 17th, 1980. And when I was 15 and a half, I was speaking to a local police officer. And we were speaking about playing guitar because I played guitar and he did also. And he said to me, why don't you come for a ride along? And I was like, oh, well, I don't know if I really want to hang out with the police. But I did. And I was like, wow, this is really exciting. And this is what I want to be a cop. So when I finished high school, I was considering joining the Coast Guard. And I did an internship with my local police department. And the police chief...
Well, talk about the local police department. What local police department? How big a department is it? What's the population? Where in New Hampshire are you?
Oh, sure. Well, it was in Southampton, New Hampshire. The police department literally was three officers. And I basically spent my time... I was a computer programmer, so I made a program to help the police department run a little bit more efficiently.
Yay!
Yay! And so I spent a lot of time riding around and, riding around on patrol with the police officers. And then the police chief said to me, he said, you want to be a part-time police officer? And I was like, oh my God, yes, absolutely. I want to be a police officer. This is my dream. And so on March 13th, 1999, about 3 months before I graduated high school, I was sworn in. And I completed my field training before I actually graduated high school. I would get out of class around 3 o'clock and then go home, put on the uniform and go out in the cruiser. I actually had the opportunity. I pulled over a kid who was in one of my classes and, I was a high school kid. And the next day he saw me in school and he's like, what the hell's going on? He's like, are you like some undercover guy? And I was like, no, it's the exact opposite. I'm a high school. I don't have my high school diploma yet. I actually had to have all my teachers and the principal sign a letter for the director of police standards in New Hampshire so I could be sworn in and work before I became certified to do so, because under state law in New Hampshire, you need to have at least a high school diploma to achieve your police certification. So I graduated the police academy before I graduated high school. And once I graduated high school, I sent them my diploma and they sent me my police certification.
Is that common?
No, it's not common.
Why would they do that? I mean, what was were you faster, bigger, stronger, quicker draw? I mean, they just liked you? What?
Well, I presume the police chief liked me. I mean, he knew my family. I sort of grew up there, and I would like to think that he thought I was a decent person.
Yeah, well, what did your classmates think?
They all thought I was some sort of undercover narc, and, I was accused of it, and I was like, "Look, man, I'm no narc. I'm going to be a cop as soon as I get out of here. It's out in the open. I'm not trying to hide anything. I don't care if everybody knows about it. I got to go to science class. I'll talk to you about it later.
So what year was it that you graduated? We're looking at
1999.
Wow.
Yeah.
Party like it's 1999, and you were on the other side of the law.
Yeah, I didn't really party that hard.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. So you started working for this three-man police force, and you augmented part-time?
Yep, I was a part-time police officer. The town had...
Well, what defined part-time? You work parades?
Well,
you work 20 hours a week doing what?
Every state's different. In New Hampshire, a part-time police officer can only work 1,300 hours per year. There's two different police academies. One is...
All right, help me out with math here. 1,300 a year is how much a week?
It's about 3.6 days a week or something, or right around that.
All right. Then what? I mean, you do that for how long?
Well... Right after I graduated high school, the one of two full-time officers left, and so the police chief asked me if I wanted to work for full-time, so I said sure. And once you are hired officially in a full-time status, you can work full-time until you go to the police academy. So when I was 19 years old, I went to the New Hampshire Police Academy, and that was pretty difficult because it's like basic training. They march you around, and it's 12 weeks away from home and getting yelled at. And the instructors there took a particular interest in me because I was so young, and I recall every day I came back to the barracks, my room was all ripped apart, and I had to make my bed like every single night because they ripped it apart. But I graduated, and that was in April of 2000. I worked at this police department until August, and when I quit, I actually reported the police chief for doing some illegal things, and I was pretty disgusted with law enforcement, and I was like, I wanted to do something else, so I started going to school full-time. I was going to the University of New Hampshire, and a local police department right next to where I worked, Newton, New Hampshire. The police chief there, a very, very good man named Richard LaBelle. I had spoken to one of his sergeants, and he offered me a job. And I worked for him. And when I was working there, I was offered a full-time job in Epping, New Hampshire, which is where I worked for 8 years. So in aggregate, I worked 11 years in law enforcement in New Hampshire.
How old are you?
I got hired full-time in law enforcement when I was 20. Actually, I was 18. And I got my last police job when I was 20. So I'm 30 years old now.
Okay. What do you mean your last police job? I mean, you worked up until when, though?
I resigned on January of 2010.
Okay. So you got, I mean, you could have retired at freaking what, 40?
39.
Wow. And you know, I tell you, one of the big things I ever hear from municipal officers, they're just, it's their pension. I want my pension, I get a retirement pension, pension, pension. And that just never occurred to you?
Oh, it, I mean, it absolutely occurred to me, but I sort of ran out of excuses as far as how to justify being a libertarian and continuing to enforce bad laws. And you know, I had a lot of, I'm sure we'll get into later, but I had a lot of people involved in the liberty movement whom were very kind to me and took a lot of time to talk about things. And, you know, as I studied history, I came to the conclusion that I could no longer claim to be a moral or just or a good person and continue to...
Since when do cops care about claiming that?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, the people that you worked with, were they claiming they were moral and just and upstanding individuals, or are they just, hey, man, I'm a cop?
Well, I mean, the mentality in the police world, it's certainly us versus them. I mean, it starts in the police academy where police instructors tell police recruits that you are no longer a civilian, you're a police officer. And I mean, that's certainly untrue. Police officers are civilians. They just happen to have the authority to initiate violence under state law. And so, I mean, the whole mentality is there that it's the police versus the public.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, how do you keep from embracing that mentality? I mean, you know, what was the thing that kept you grounded another direction? I don't understand how you were inoculated against this mindset.
Well, the thing that got me involved with the Free State Project, which ultimately...
I mean, is that what did it? Was the Free State Project coming around?
Yeah, the Free State...
So before then, you were busting heads and kicking butt? I mean, what?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Before we get into your revelation, your epiphany or whatever, you know, explain to me how it is that you were treating your fellow man. I mean, you're like, oh, heck yeah. Ooh, look at my badge. You know what?
Well, I consider myself to be a very polite person. And with the exception of a few instances where I was unprofessional for whatever reason, someone upset me or I just lost my cool, I always prided myself on being a very polite police officer who did his job very aggressively. So, I mean, I would trick people into allowing me to have consent to search their car, you know, and find various innocuous items to use to take their freedom away. And all the while I'd be very polite and respectful to them. So, I mean, I was a polite person who treated people well, but I enforced bad laws very aggressively.
So you were the velvet glove.
That's a very good analogy. Yeah.
But it was in a fist.
Yes. That's
yeah. Okay. So I mean, as someone, you know, you can help me out with this. I mean, I don't think I've ever talked to anybody about this before. I have a lot of experience dealing with police officers. Usually it's, one-on-one, they pull me over kind of thing. I just, you know, don't want to die and whatever. We'll worry about it later and be nice or I'll make you my project. But the when it comes to activist things or we're prepping the police department for something that we're about to do and it's going to get a lot of press or media or we're, you know, whatever. I just like, look, man, I know you got to do your job, whatever you think that is, and do it, but let me tell you what's going to happen. We're going to do this and you have options of this, this, and this. And they go, chest out, respect my authority, and they want you to comply with whatever the heck it is that they're going to do. But when they're being filmed, especially now, when they're being pressed, they oftentimes will make the decision to be more aggressive, try to maintain control, I'm in charge kind of mentality, even when it's not to their best interest. You and your brethren in general, is there a, it's a tactic or is it a character trait that you must be not only in charge, but the other people have to be submissive? I mean, is that a character trait or is it a tactic that's learned?
Well, like I said, there is a distinct us versus them paradigm in the policing world. And I mean, a good example is these thin blue line stickers that you'll see on the back of cars, and it's used to identify people who are in. If you're not in, you're out. And a lot, it seems to me that a lot of the people whom apply for police jobs are people whom are aggressive, people who have a general bully mindset, people who
did you
want
consider
to
yourself that way when you were younger?
No. In fact, I distinctly remember when I was in school being bullied, and I think...
Does it have something to do with the, you know, I got a badge now?
I think what I went through as a kid made me realize that I had become what I most despised, and that's a person who hurts other people. And the whole spark happened that led me to the Free State Project. It all happened one night when I was on the internet. I was just surfing around.
We're going to get to that because we haven't got to you being a jackbooted thug yet. And you're kind of glazing over that part.
Okay.
You know, I'm not like, no. I want to hear, you know, because before you start having some kind of feelings of remorse or guilt, or you know, want to be able to, you know, come around to the other side, there has to have been something that would even make you, you know, compare or even want to. And we're going to find out what that is in a little bit when we come back. Because I want to make sure that when we come back, I want to know some of the things that you've done that, looking back, you regret. And what kind of impact did it have on other people? We're going to talk about it more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Bradley Jarnes in just a little bit.